right. First, I'd like to acknowledge colleagues who were involved in this research as well, and one of them is in the room, Dr. Dwayne McBride. And we're mostly from Andrews University, which is, if you are ever anywhere near the state of Michigan, we all refer to our hand as the map of Michigan, and we're just over here on this side, and Chicago is here, so it's a mere 90-minute drive. No relationships to disclose. So the basic aim of this presentation is to look at survey findings on teacher and parent support and its relationship to bullying behaviors in a school program called Girls on the Run. And this is an after-school program I'll describe in just a moment. And I should say at the outset that the Girls on the Run program is not a bullying intervention program. It has bullying as one of its components. And so we're not, in this particular presentation, evaluating the program. That's a whole other discussion. Quick review of the literature. I think most everyone knows definition of bullying, and there are various definitions, but generally it has to do with power and can be hurtful behaviors, but it can also be psychological behaviors and shunning and electronic and all of those other things that have already been mentioned. We also know that nationally, and we're going to focus on elementary and middle school in this presentation. Most of the other presentations have focused on YRBS data, which is generally high school students and upper middle school. So this is a younger demographic. But what we do know is 28% of sixth graders, 26% of seventh graders, 22% eighth graders were bullied. White females were more likely to have been bullied on school property than black females or Hispanic females. We'll be talking about a few ethnic differences a little bit later, so I just wanted to bring that up. 29% of ninth graders were bullied in the past year of females. So our cohort is females only, so it's a very selective kind of subsample of kids who are younger and female. Boys more involved in physical or verbal bullying, girls more involved in relational bullying. And finally, higher parental support, which is one of the variables we'll be looking at, is associated with less involvement in bullying across all forms and classifications in bullying. So in some ways, we're also kind of testing or reaffirming that relationship in this review. So for those of you that have not seen the data, this one at least breaks out. This is national data. This is U.S. Department of Education. So you can see that the lightest bar at the bottom of each of the categories is females who bully. So you can kind of look at the bully or were bullied. In this case, I think these were all people, kids who were bullied, not who bullied. And you can see that there are some differences, predominantly subject of rumors is more likely to be a female. Females are much more likely to bully in that area or to be bullied. And you also see some higher rates in made fun of and being called names and insulted. So just a little quick background. I don't want to focus too heavily on what Girls on the Run is, because again, this is predominantly a program that's looking at physical activity and body size, satisfaction, self-esteem. Bullying is one of the components. And one of the take-home lessons, even though that's not what this presentation is about, is that if you just include tidbits about bullying in a program that isn't about bullying, as you would expect, as we know from public health, generally you need to have sustained interventions and sustained interaction. This particular program only had one bullying day of discussion, and that didn't actually show any changes from pre-test to post-test. But again, we're not talking about that today. We're only going to be looking at pre-test and looking at relationships between parental and teacher support and bullying. So we had two groups. We had Girls on the Run, which is the third to fifth graders, elementary school kids, and then we had Girls on Track, which were sixth graders to eighth graders. Much higher numbers of elementary school kids, as you'll see in just a second. So these were recruited for a 10-week program, School Fitness and Character Education, as we already mentioned, in Berrien County, spring of 2013. There were, in the beginning, 708 kids across 28 elementary and middle schools. We had pre-tests that were completed at the beginning and then post-test at the end of the 10-week program. We only looked at the pre-test when we were analyzing our data. We kept in 510 surveys, and we did the following analyses. So, three independent variable questions relating to teachers. The first question, and these were all from the California Healthy Kids Survey: do teachers and other grown-ups at school care about you? Do teachers and other grown-ups at school listen to you? Do teachers and other grown-ups believe you can do a good job? So those were the three teacher variables. Two parent variables: does a parent or some other grown-up at home believe you can do a good job? Parent or some other grown-up believe you have something to say? So very similar kinds of questions for teachers and for parents. And then the dependent variables: two questions were asked from the Delaware Bullying Questionnaire. The first one: how often do you bully others by saying mean things, teasing, or calling names to other students? We refer to this as more active bullying, where they're doing something, they're saying mean things, teasing, calling names. And then how often do you spread mean rumors or leave out other students from your activities to be mean? That's more of a passive bullying, we thought. So our sample, here are the demographics. As you can see, 2/3, a little more than that, are white. And then the breakdown gets a lot more complicated after that. You can see that we only had 6% black, which was a sample number of 33. And then we only had 3% who were Hispanic. And so we couldn't do a whole lot with anything other than white, black, and then we combined our other data together. So you'll see that we had to do some collapsing of data. You can also see grade level, that the third, fourth, and fifth graders predominantly are the ones who jump into this program. And so we had 448 who were in elementary school, and then the remaining 12% for an N of 62 were in middle school. So here's just some of the data from the independent variables, just so you can see the percentages. I'll have you focus in just on the all of the time category, the column on the almost far right. So teachers believe you can do a good job. 75% of kids believe that. Teachers care about you. That drops down to about 2/3. Teachers listen to you, and that drops down to about 40%. So they're more likely to believe in them and to care about them than they are to actually listen to them all the time. But maybe that's you would expect that at some level. And the same thing actually for parents. Parents believing that you can do a good job, 80% all of the time, and parent or grown-up, and I see that I'm not quite fitting on the screen here, but parent or grown-up thinks that listens to you, I believe, is the last one, and that drops down to 43% as well. So similar parents and teachers are listening at about the same rate all of the time to their children. So parents, either parents need to feel bad or teachers need to feel better. I'm not sure which it is, but both cases. So grade level by bullying. So we had two questions, remember, for our dependent variables. How often do you bully others by saying mean things, tease, or call names? And so if we look down at the never category again, you can see for elementary school kids, about 2/3 say that they never do these kinds of things. And this is self-report, obviously. And for the middle school, you can see it's just a bit lower at 60%. The second question, how often do you bully others by spreading mean rumors? This is the more passive bullying, and you can see that 82% said of the elementary school kids said that they never do this, and about 84% said that they never do that in middle school. So very similar data across both elementary and middle school. Okay, so let's look at some odds ratios. The first thing that we did is we looked at elementary and middle school students together about the first question about who do not say mean things. So this is the never category. So the way that you would talk about this is that in each of these categories, this is the odds that students in both elementary and middle school do not say mean things, tease, or call names. And so you can see that they're almost, I guess not quite, 2 times more likely not to say mean things. That's the never category. So it's a good thing, and you can see across almost all of the variables that these kids are pretty consistent in the never category. And you can see for those, both teachers and for one of the two variables for parents, that they're less likely to say mean things if they have parents, teachers who care about them and listen to them. We asked the same question for the passive question about spreading mean rumors, and you can see that it's almost identical odds ratios. Doesn't seem to matter whether it's active or passive bullying. You see the same protective effects taking place. If we move on and just look at elementary school kids, we drop out the middle school kids from this, the girls from this equation, and you can see almost again very similar odds ratios across both teachers and one of the two questions for parents, that you're almost twice as likely not to say mean things, tease, or call names. That's for the active question. If we look at the passive bullying question, it's almost the same odds ratios all the way across. Now, if we just look at the middle school kids, you can see that all of a sudden, all of the variables drop away in terms of significance, and it doesn't seem to, this model doesn't seem to work for the middle school kids. Remember that we have about 62 middle school kids that were answering these questions. So it works for elementary school kids in explaining the relationships. It doesn't seem to work in this case for middle school kids. That's for the first question about mean things, teasing, and calling names. Same thing for mean rumors and leaving students out of activities to be mean. Again, we're not seeing significance in that area. So we move on and let's look at some ethnicity variables, and we can see here very similar when we look at white girls who do not say mean things, tease, or call names. Again, we're looking at it in the same way, and you can see across four of the five variables almost exactly the same odds ratios across. Now, remembering too that we have two-thirds of the girls are white, and so this is a pretty large sample that we're looking at. White girls that don't spread mean rumors, so this is the passive bullying. Again, very similar sorts of odds ratios. Then, and I don't know why this isn't scaling on this computer, but I apologize for that, why it's not fitting on the screen, because it looks good on my computer. But this one says black students who do not spread mean rumors or leave students out of activities to mean, and don't spread mean rumor. That should be the active and the passive. And in both cases, those are not significant. So this doesn't mean that black students are more likely to bully. In fact, white students are a bit more likely to bully than the black students. What this means is that this model doesn't explain those differences in why black students would not bully. Teachers, parents don't seem to be the variable that helps us to understand why the kids wouldn't bully. So key findings. Again, frequency showed that one-third of all girls admitted to bullying others by saying mean things, teasing, or calling names, and less than 20% of all girls spread rumors or left other girls out to be mean in the past year. So about one-third active bullying, 20% passive bullying. Elementary school girls who believed that teachers and other grown-ups at school cared about them, listened to them, or believed that they could do a good job were almost twice as likely to not engage in bullying behaviors. That was the never category. And in addition, elementary school girls who believed that they had parents or other grown-ups at home that listened were significantly more likely not to bully others. So those are just the summaries of the findings. Same findings were consistent for white girls, but were not found for black girls. And when we did the category, I didn't show these odds ratios, but when we combined those other categories of ethnicities together, we found that teachers and other grown-ups were significant in predicting that they would not engage bullying behaviors at about 1.77 times, and multi-ethnic or other girls who had teachers who cared for and believed were 1.95 and 2.04 times more likely not to bully. So those were significant as well. Limitations, well, obviously we're only one county, so we can't generalize across the entire nation. It's a small number of ethnic minority students, and so that makes comparisons with white girls problematic. Obviously, there are no boys, and so we can't generalize to boys. Action steps for parents. So we thought about some practical steps that we could think about because I'm a social worker and I care about, you know, what do we actually do to make a difference in making changes that would maybe more likely reinforce not bullying. And here are a few things that we were thinking about. First of all, the showing of unconditional love, and particularly listening well, seems to matter. And so remember, kids that are well listened to, even if they're only listened to, fully listened to part of the time, they seem to have a greater sense that they're being cared for and they're less likely to bully. Spending quality time and quantity time with kids, showing up matters. And I think we all know that. Third, showing support, building on the positive interests of kids becomes very important. That means that you reinforce the things that they care about, the things that they like, their interests, their hobbies, their after-school programs, all of those kinds of things. Setting clear expectations for behavior has also been shown to be reinforcing and non-negative in not bullying. And then monitoring friends and free time, paying attention to what kids do and caring about what they do and making sure that they are, and this could include some level of monitoring at least in electronic media as well. And then one of the factors that we found in our research that has been very consistent is having family dinners, which is probably a proxy for caring and probably a proxy for monitoring. But the more family dinners that you have, the less likely you are to have a multitude of risk behaviors occur. It's a very interesting variable. And again, we think it's a proxy that you see for both for monitoring and for support and care and for basically showing up. Action steps for teachers, well, that would include things like listening well, as you would expect, praising students for good performance and for good behavior, unconditional positive regard for students while keeping good boundaries at the same time, obviously, stressing the importance that parents play in developing a healthy home environment. So this means that you're communicating effectively with parents and talking to the parents about what role that they play and how important it is to, you know, be engaged in their kids' lives. And obviously, these are things that we all know, but these are things that oftentimes don't take place in kids' lives who bully. So these are ways that we can do the protective, preventive things that we all know work and that can make a difference in this case bullying, but also in other high-risk behaviors. And then involving parents in school activities as well. So conclusions, elementary school girls and white girls who have supportive teachers and parents are significantly more likely not to bully others. Multi-ethnic and non-black girls who have supportive teachers are significantly likely not to bully others. And then strengthening relationship bonds and improving positive communication between girls and their parents and teachers may result in less bullying behaviors. Thank you.
In listening to these presentations, I can't remember who said it, and I'm not going to quote it exactly, but evil occurs when good folks do nothing. And I think this was really brought home in this last presentation. We do have some additional time for questions. Right here in front. Please, go ahead.
Self-report on you being a bully, and I'm wondering if they, if people who are bullies are less likely to report that they're bullies, or less likely to report that they're bullies more often, and maybe that could be a missing piece.
Sure. I think we know from research that people are more likely to underreport their bullying behaviors, just because there might be social stigma, or there might be shame, or whatever else. That said, 33% of these girls were willing to say that they bullied. And one of the things that I found really interesting, and this is the part of the pre and post that we didn't talk about, but in the post test, there were actually more girls that identified that they bullied than at the pre-test. And what we think is going on is that kids were more likely to say, oh, so that's what bullying means. And so they were likely to then say, I guess maybe I do bully, and so the rates actually went up. But it's not a good test to show whether or not your intervention actually changed bullying behavior. And again, one intervention with one day's exposure is probably enough just to help kids to understand, oh yeah, that's what bullying is, and that it doesn't just involve, pushing people in the mud or hitting people. It actually involves, especially for elementary school kids who kind of need to understand, what does this mean? Well, it means saying mean things, it means, leaving people out, things that are more subtle than maybe they might think of traditionally when they think of bullying. But underreporting, I'm absolutely sure does happen.
Yes, please.
I'm just curious, in the calculation of your odds ratios, how did you operationalize the predictor of the exposures, so like those questions? Because you had like four categories.
Right, so we had never was one, and then all of the rest were zero.
So it was some, yes.
Right, okay. Right, right. It was never versus some, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Are there any plans to bring the project to Northern Area, like Chicago or Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking specifically about the Girls on the Run program?
Well, I mean, that's how you spoke about initially.
Right.
It would be easier to do that
here in
Chicago.
Yeah, and again, it's not a bullying program, and so if you're trying to do bullying programs, there are other much more widely used and validated anti-bullying programs. But in terms of being a really great program for physical activity and self-esteem, it actually does some really nice things. And it's an international program. I mean, all you have to do is Google Girls on the Run. And there's programs that, you're absolutely right, are all over the nation. So it's an after-school program. So you're recruiting coaches, you're recruiting, you know, maybe teachers who might be interested. But
yeah,
there's
a huge
environment
to it.
Oh, absolutely. Right. One of my real frustrations with these kinds of hit everything in one program interventions is that they tend to try and do everything, and so they do not very much well. In this case, one of the things that they do really well is exercise and activity, because they're trying to help kids to become more active, and they do a lot of messages around self-esteem and self-worth and those kinds of things, and that's what it does well. The other pieces, I get frustrated because I don't feel that it really does some of those other things as well as bullying would be one of those.
Other questions? Yes, please.
I have a question about the Chicago Public Schools and any of the 20 schools that you worked with. Are there any organizations like LISTEN or the Gay Straight Alliance, or even just general anti-bullying peers stuff going on?
Yeah. Yeah, so the Illinois Safe Schools Alliance does a lot of work in Chicago Public Schools and around the state as well for gay straight alliances and other work specific to bullying of LGBTQ students. And then we have a number of other community-based organizations that have been approved to do bullying work in schools. So their curricula and their programs get reviewed either by our office or by the Office of Social and Emotional Learning, depending on the focus area. So I don't know offhand exactly how many of the schools that we work with are working with those organizations, but there's so many other organizations doing great work in Chicago that are working with schools on this.
I think Curtis brought forth something that's very important for all of us as researchers. If the people don't know what we're looking for, quote unquote, they don't know how to respond. So I think that might, I think he brought forth very, very clearly that more was identified in the post-test than the pre-test. It kind of reminded me of Lewis Carroll and Alice in Wonderland when the Cheshire Cat asked Alice, "Where are you going?" "I don't know." "Well, then how do you know when you get there?" I think we have to keep that in mind. Other questions? Well, thank you, folks, for coming. Please join me in... I'm sorry.
Laura, actually. I'm really interested in how you do the kind of focus, not the focus group piece, but the skills-based stuff. And particularly since you saw changes around some of the transgender issues from pre to post-test, some of the other stuff, most of the faculty or the staff seem to understand, and they seem to at least have definitional and other kinds of things pretty clearly in mind. But the transgender issues seem to be a new piece for them. And how did you do the actual role plays and that kind of piece?
So the role plays in the trainings were done. I mean, we had day one, we had four different scenarios that we talked through. So we presented those scenarios and actually had volunteers like role play different options as well during the trainings. And then our facilitators who have expertise in this were able to respond to different . That's how we do it in the in-person version. We're still working out exactly how to do it in the online version, although there is a really great online training called Step and Speed Up, created by Condo Training, that actually is interactive and it presents situations, and the person who's doing the training then chooses their their option of how you want to respond. So if it's like a teacher in the classroom, there'll be a situation that's going on, and then based on how the user, like whichever one the user selects, it will then show how that situation will unfold. And then you'll have the option to go back and select a different one and see how it will unfold that way. Mm-hmm. We don't have the technological capacity or the money to do something like that, but that does exist already in the app on that. And through a grant in Illinois, it's actually available for free to all Illinois.
And some of the new training I know that's just coming out has to do with using avatars to help do training. I don't know if it's moved into this area or not, because I do more stuff than substance abuse prevention, and there's a model called screening and brief intervention for treatment. And they're creating these avatars where you can learn how to kind of nuance and improve your skills set online,
yeah,
and talk back and forth with the avatar, and if you're doing it wrong, then you don't do well, and if you do right, then you are moving
yeah.
more toward better skills. So that may be the next future for this.
Kind of thing as well.
Comes out of NORC.
Please join me in thanking our presenters. Have a good evening. Enjoy the rest of the conference.